Hey, what's good, folks? But for today's episode, we have a special announcement for you.
Yes, we've officially launched the first ever Paychecks and Balances audience survey. We hit our 3-year anniversary as podcasters last week, and during those 3 years, we've never, ever, ever surveyed our audience.
So we've made a lot of assumptions based on the Twitters and other social media and the questions that we get here and there. But in the years that we've been doing this, we've never put anything out there. It's kind of amazing.
So to take advantage of our first audience survey, I will also learn how to say advantage, visit paychecksandbalances.com/survey, and we won't be leaving it open that long. So complete it today before you forget and get busy.
Yes, we're talking to you. We know how you are. You say you're going to come back to it, and then like 3 weeks go by, you haven't come back to it. So do that today. But seriously, complete the survey. It'll inform what the podcast looks like in 2017. You'll have a chance to play a role in that. So once again, paychecksandbalances.com/survey. Tiss it. Enjoy the show. Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we chop it up about work and money for millennials with the hope we don't leave you saying, I don't really like this at all.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances, all words.
And if you've been enjoying the show, drop by, hit us with the 5 stars on iTunes. If you don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. It helps us stay visible in the rankings, which means we reach more people.
And if we reach more people, we help more people.
Indeed we do, friend.
So today we're joined by Letitia Stiles. Letitia has two degrees. She's also the founder of the blog Financial Success for Young Adults, Financial Success Media Incorporated, and is a millennial personal finance expert, author, and TV personality featured in Forbes, The Economist, Business Insider, MTV, and Essence, just to name a few. She knows what she's talking about, folks. And thank you for joining us, Letitia.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's pretty boss. Marcus did a good job there with the intro and all the details. I'm like, yeah, I got life goals, you know.
It does make me feel like I got to get my life together, but you know, one step at a time. You always got to have something to shoot for. That's why they have people at the top, and I don't know where on the scale I fall, but I hope it's not the bottom. So is there anything else that you want to tell the people about yourself that we didn't hit on in that opening description?
I think you hit on most everything. You know, like you were saying, you know, I founded Young Finances and I am motivated and really, really passionate about helping millennials to earn more money in all aspects. So I'm looking forward to talking about that with you guys today.
Dope.
How's that going? I feel like I don't know how to feel about us millennials. Like I'm an 82. So I'm like right there on the cusp. So sometimes I like claim X when the millennials are acting up. I'm like, nah, man, I'm X.
No, you count. You count. That's it.
I can't speak for these millennials. So how is it working with this millennial cohort?
Well, I think right now what we're seeing is like a split inside of the millennial cohort, as you said. So we've got the younger millennials, which right now, you know, are about age 20 to, you know, mid to late 20s. And then we've got the older millennials that are, you know, later 20s and early 30s. And what's happening is, you know, the older millennials, we really got hit with that Great Recession, because that's when we were graduating from college. That's when we were trying to get our first job. That's when we were, you know, maybe even already in a job and then got laid off. And then the younger millennials are, you know, they're still kind of getting hit with those student loans and they're still trying to make it happen right now. But, unfortunately, I feel like millennials, we got a couple bad years in there.
Yeah.
And I always get this confused. Is our range like about 18 to 34 right now? What is the millennial definition? I think a couple of people use a little bit different. Have you defined it?
Yeah. So the oldest millennials are about 34, 35 right now.
Yeah, as Marcus,
and the
you,
youngest
bro.
Millennials are like 19, 20.
Chit.
Marcus is on the cusp. You're almost back in my day, millennial.
I feel like I've earned the right to say to these goddamn kids, you know, I just feel like that is, I can add that to my resume at this point in my life. So on your website, LetitiaStiles.com, you talk about graduating to the Great Recession, which you alluded to here, couldn't find a job. So I created my own. How'd you go about doing that?
Yeah, I was living at home. I had graduated, like you said, with two degrees. I had went back to school to get my second degree and got out of school and still couldn't find a job. And, you know, I overheard my mom on the phone with my grandma, actually. And she was like, well, you know, Letitia, she's got 2 degrees, but I don't know what she's doing with them. She's not doing anything with either one of them. So I said to myself, okay, I know what I know, and I know enough about finance in order to teach, you know, just a little bit of what I know. I had been trading while I was in college. And so I said, well, I'm just going to start a website. I didn't even realize that it would be called a blog at the time. I said, I'm just going to start a website. And on this website, I'm going to write about everything that I know about investing. And it eventually evolved into, you know, a blog and talking about personal finance and then a YouTube channel and everything that it is now. But, you know, at the start of it, it was just me wanting to prove my mom wrong and show that I actually did know something and I was doing something with my degree. And eventually someone would hire me for that.
Dope.
That's a surprisingly good motivating factor. And I'm just going to let it go with that.
So I definitely want to hear more about the investing side. And I know there's more to the journey, but, you know, I realize we said you had 2 degrees, but I don't think we said what they were. So what are your degrees in?
Yeah, I've got a Spanish degree as well as a finance degree.
Okay, got it, got it. And then I did see on the website where you looked at 3 different career paths. There was accounting, which you were kind of like, yeah. Then there was engineering, where you were pretty much like watching it fly over your head. And I did the same thing. I remember in high school coming out, I was like, I'm going to be an engineer. I'm going to get this guap. I'm going to make things. I'm going to write code. And I took the SAT to math and was like, I'm not going to be an engineer. I'm not going to make things. I'm not going to write code. And ended up in the HR world. But then you also mentioned finance and you realized that that was just right. So in a lot of people's minds, accounting and finance are the same thing. So what are the differences or what's the difference in terms of how you looked at each of those?
So with accounting, I saw accounting is actually a lot more math than finance because finance is more looking at the numbers and understanding the story once you see the numbers. Mm. Now, obviously there's some math and there's some calculations there, but with accounting, it's literally, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. And if 1 and 1 = 2, you know, where did that go wrong? Whereas finances, now that we have that number 2, what does that tell us about, you know, what we're looking at?
Got it.
So you say that you target millennials, but millennial women to be more specific. And this is something that I think I don't know if struggle is the right word, but, you know, I think we like to think we're woke, but I more or less call it blind spots. That's kind of what I've used over the years. And I think all of us have them in different areas. So what do you think that you've seen and or heard or maybe unfortunately experienced that maybe men either purposely or accidentally have a blind spot for as far as issues specific to women's careers?
Yeah, I think one of the number one things is having mentorship in place, because it's really easy, you know, as career fields in general are male dominated as you get older, right? Because more women are taking the time to take care of their families. Whereas, you know, men, they have the opportunity to see other men in higher ranking positions and maybe get a mentor and figure out what their career path looks like. For women, a lot of times there's not someone in that higher ranking position where they can, you know, aspire to or connect with or, you know, learn from. The company that I worked with, they actually did a really good job at pairing me with a mentor. It was a male mentor, but it was someone who I could speak with about, you know, what I thought my career path might be. And he was able to sort of direct me in, you know, where I should go and what I should do and people I should talk to and things that I needed to change in order to make it there. But I think that's probably one of the biggest blind spots is not pairing a female with a mentor, someone that can help them on their career path and figure out, okay, if I do want to take time off from my career to take care of my family or have a child, how is that going to affect things? And what can I do in order to still make it to where I want to be?
So do you get into the whole, and I've heard some conversations around this, I might be able to speak to a little bit, the difference between a mentor and a coach, or do you kind of see those as one and the same?
I mean, I think that's just semantics. So I feel like a mentor is someone who has volunteered or been chosen for you to help you to learn the ropes in whatever your career is, whatever your business is. And typically that's someone that's probably not being paid for that, you know, directly or not being paid directly by you. Whereas I'd see a coach as someone who you specifically went out to hire that person to say, okay, I need help with X, Y, or Z, and I'm going to hire a coach like a personal trainer, like a, you know, a business coach or something like that. That's kind of where I see the difference. But I think the words, honestly, probably just a little bit of semantics, but that's kind of where I see the difference there.
So for the mentorship programs, and we're very big on a mentorship. I try to advocate for it pretty much every chance I got. I just realized now that I haven't harassed people about that recently. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely really big on mentorship programs. And do you think there's an expectation for a successful mentorship program to have some type of advocacy? Because I think that's where some people try to differentiate between the two, if they are going to call it, you know, mentoring or coaching, in that not only are you developing me or providing me coaching in these areas, but you can also then advocate for that raise. Are you are the hiring manager in that next position, or you can assist me with a horizontal or vertical move. Do you think that has to be a part of a mentor relationship?
I mean, definitely. You should definitely feel like the mentor is, you know, quote unquote, in your corner. And for me, that was definitely the case. The mentor that I had, like I said, he was sort of directing me and the things that I needed to do in order to make it to the next level. And when I had my my evaluation, my end of year evaluation, you know, my direct managers told me, OK, well, we've spoken to your mentor and he said you're doing a really good job here, here and here. And so that's also factoring into your raise. So, yeah, I think it's definitely important for that mentor to be your advocate and to speak on your behalf, especially when they can see all of the areas where you are growing and where you're seeing growth, where your direct boss or manager might not be able to see that because, you know, you're not in their office chatting about all the behind the scenes stuff, right? All they're seeing is what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Mm. Now, mentorship, it's an interesting topic for me, given that by day, I think a lot about the overall diversity conversation and how we get people to the next level in their company. But there are a lot of people who have interest outside of work, and finding a mentor in a structured environment, especially if it's in a large company, I don't want to call that easy by any means, but a lot of times there's like a starting point for here's how you go about finding one, or here are the people who are interested. But Now you're on the other side where you're working for yourself, and it's not like there's just like a pool of people or a pool of executives that you would go earn. I mean, maybe there are. But how do you recommend people find mentorships kind of when they're doing their own thing? Because, you know, like I think for myself, a mentor for, you know, the HR and the recruiting field is going to look different than a mentor for me launching my own business on the side. So how would you recommend that people go about finding a mentor and establishing that relationship?
I would say the first thing that you should do is find someone who's been where you want to go. And once you find that person, you know, get attached into their world, figure out exactly, you know, what they're doing, whether they're on Periscope or if they're on Facebook Live, like just start being a part of their world and start watching to see what it is they're doing. If you feel like that's the person that can or should be your mentor, you have a couple of options. You can reach out to them and say, you know, I'm looking for a mentor. Typically that's probably not going to work as well as if you had something to offer first. Mm. Because if someone is, you know, at that point where they're, you know, they're pretty, I don't want to say popular, but, you know, they're pretty busy and they've got, you know, sort of their business going, like you said, different from being in a career position where they might be appointed to be a mentor. You know, you're running your own business. It's your decision what you do with your time and whether or not you take on a mentee. And, you know, so your options are, you know, reach out to them, either ask them, hey, I'm looking for a mentor, or, you know, provide or have something to offer for them, figure out. And if you've been in their world for a little bit, you can kind of get an idea of what it is that they need next. Or on the flip side, if if you're scared and you don't want to just go through that, then you can just pay a mentor, find someone who offers their services and, you know, just choose to make that investment in yourself and work with them.
Now, I think it's important. It's a really important point about making sure that you have something you can offer. But for some people who haven't quite figured out where they want to go yet, and I felt this way before we're reaching out to people, it's like, I don't feel like I really have anything to offer this person. They've got 50,000 followers. They're on CNN. What can I offer this person that would really be useful to them? So any suggestions for people who are feeling that they don't have anything to offer to this person yet, which is kind of part of the reason that they're looking for mentorship.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I learned from it's a guy named Jordan Harbinger, and he talks about, you know, getting a mentor. But, you know, a lot of times people will come to you and they're like, well, or they talk to me and they say, well, I feel like I have nothing to offer that person. Like, what can I offer? But what you can do is figure out like what it is they're working on. And you just sort of have to kind of try to peek in. you're on the outside looking in, but if you can sort of figure out what it is they're working on or find something that doesn't seem like it's working, then you can contact them and you can say, hey, I noticed that, for example, I noticed that you guys are putting out podcasts every week. And, you know, do you have someone that does the edits for you? If not, you know, I've got this, I can do the edits. Or, you know, it might be something that big, but it might be something small. For me, for example, I do all of my YouTube videos on my own. I would love to mentor someone if they were to edit my YouTube videos, right?
Uh-oh. You just might get some emails around the holidays.
So it's like, there's always something you have to offer, even if it's just, you know, just the work that you can do. And that's what I learned. I learned that you have to figure out what it is they're working on and then offer one specific thing. Like, you can't just walk up to them and say, you know, let me know if I can help, or let me know if there's anywhere I can help, because they've got so much stuff going on. Like, they don't know what your skills are. So figure out what your skills are, figure out where they're, you know, what they're putting out there, and then figure out where you can kind of mesh those together.
So it sounds like you would not advocate for just sending them your resume, because there are some people who might just send their resume and be like, here are the things that I've done. So it sounds like you would advocate instead of sending a resume for them to review, saying, here's what I can do, like specifically to eliminate that extra step for them.
Exactly. When you're thinking of, you know, partnering with an entrepreneur, you have to think that this is not a hiring manager that is, you know, looking through resumes all day. This is not someone who, you know, is working for someone else and maybe has a little bit of downtime. Like, as an entrepreneur, almost every single minute of our day is dedicated to something that's moving our business forward. And, you know, if it's not, then it's something else that's clogging up our inbox. So if you're going to contact an entrepreneur, you have to keep that in mind. It's not that they're too busy to talk to you, but they're going to prioritize their time based on what comes in. So if I get two emails, one of them is a resume that says, hey, this is my resume and, you know, I'd love to help you out. And one person contacts me and says, hey, I noticed that you post on Twitter, you know, 3 times a day. I was wondering if you'd like to post more. I do social media management. Would you like a social media manager? You know, like, that's, I can easily say yes, no, versus, okay, let me read a resume and figure out where this person can help me.
Dope. Super dope.
I like that. Are you seeing anything, or maybe just even have an opinion on something that's more unique to millennial women that maybe older generations can't relate to or aren't facing?
That's a good question. I don't know about millennial women specifically, but I think millennials as a whole, you know, we really want it all now. and, you know, I say we because I'm, you know, guilty of this as well. But, you know, I didn't want to wait for someone to promote me, you know, to the status or to that position that, you know, that I thought I should be at already. And a lot of times I think that's kind of a drawback. We feel like we're ready for the next thing when we might not necessarily be ready. And I say this, like, looking back in hindsight, it's difficult for us to see, you know, when we're actually ready for that promotion or when we're actually ready to take on that next, you know, that next career move. And it wasn't something that I learned until I became, you know, a full-time entrepreneur. And now I can look back and see, okay, well, you know, maybe I wasn't ready for those, for that position or whatnot. So I think as millennials, you know, we want what we want. I mean, we're so into this digital age where everything is on demand and everything is immediate. We have a question, we can just, you know, pick up our phone if it's not already in our hand and find the answer. And so I think that's sort of a drawback these days, is that because everything is so immediate, when something is not immediate, it seems like it's a no, or you're not ready, versus a, you know, just wait and then until you get ready.
Finger snaps, finger snaps, finger snaps.
Yeah, someone along those lines, and for some reason, it never really occurred to me this way, is that even just by the nature of the way the generations were born, as far as spikes, that if you look at management, there's a huge spike because there's a large set of baby boomers. I think baby boomers are in their 50s to 70s or so. And mm-hmm. so then you just have this huge gap between middle management, and then everyone's like 30, 40. And for some reason, that never really clicked to me. I've been paying close attention to it recently. Like, if you look at CEO, pretty much everywhere, it's pretty clear. And because it's just literally, surely, literally the numbers. And so along those lines, have you seen, or do you have thoughts on something that companies can do to assist with as millennials start to take on that transition? Because I agree with you that I mean, we're going to have to. So I guess it's not even a thing. We will eventually have to be successful in these managerial roles, because mm-hmm. they will vacate and there will be nobody in them. But do you have any thoughts on how that can be a more seamless transition for millennials who don't tend to be patient?
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's the problem, is that millennials, like, we just don't necessarily stay at jobs as long as, you know, as long as our, you know, baby boomers staying at jobs years and years and years. Millennials are job hoppers. And that's an issue when you're trying to have that transition and get your, you know, your management, the baby boomers, their 401ks are coming back, you know, they're starting to get ready to retire. And there's no one that's really trained in order to take those positions. I honestly think we're going to move more into an outsourced economy. And so there will be fewer jobs in upper management, because there's going to be less people to, or fewer people to manage at the lower end, because there's going to be more freelancers and more outsourced companies sort of taking care of some of those things that, you know, would have been taken care of internally.
Mm. And another question that I've maybe even struggled is the word this time is, do you see millennials that want those positions? Like, I actively have had several at this point conversations with millennials who, skill wise, I'll just say younger individuals. I mean, some people feel some type of way about being labeled a millennial. skill wise, professionally, background, certifications, great resume, great speaker. And I'm like, hey, you know, you're on a great promotion route. And they're like devastated. They're like, man, I don't want to promote. Like, they do not want to manage. They're like, man, I can't deal with more than three people unless it's social media. And I'm like,
Well, I mean, was that not me a few months ago? I probably shouldn't be saying that, like, on the podcast. But like, was there not a point where I was like, yo, I could be a manager, you know, I should be ambitious. And that's the other thing, the whole feeling of what we should be doing. And it's like, you know, I should want to go to the next level, but I know that by doing that, it's going to mean I'm going to have to sacrifice other things. And so I know that if I get promoted to a manager and it's more than just me, I'm now responsible for a team of people, which means that I probably got to take calls that I wouldn't normally take. I got to think about things I wouldn't normally think about that may get in the way of some of the other goals and the vision that I have for my future. So I imagine that that's part of it, but I'll let you kind of clarify or fill in the gaps there.
Yeah. And, you know, the media, they call millennials selfish because, okay, we don't want to step into, you know, those positions, or we don't want to get promoted. We just want to worry about ourselves and, you know, take selfies all day. But I honestly believe that as millennials and as young people, we just want a more well-rounded life. You know, we don't want to have to, you know, stay at a job for 40 years and then retire. We want to have the ability in that freedom in order to, you know, take additional time off. And you know that if you get promoted to management, now everything is on your shoulders. And if those people don't come in, you know, the people who are working with you, if they don't come in and finish the job, you have to make sure it gets done. And that's going to interrupt your desire to take some time off and actually enjoy life. So I think that's where the clash is coming in. The clash is coming in where, as you know, young people, millennials, we want a more well-rounded life. We want to be able to travel when we want, take time off when we want, and then just have the job as an additional piece of our life versus having the job being, you know, the entire story of our lives.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I was having a similar conversation with someone recently, and because I've struggled with this, like, you know, because like I said, I deny millennials from time to time. Mm-hmm. I try not to go full Judas on the millennials, but, you know, sometimes you just got to turn your back. And I think it's driven me crazy because I'm like, what did they do before? Did they literally just work their entire lives like that, mm-hmm. With no purpose? And like, that doesn't make any it doesn't make any sense to me. And it only became clear to me recently when I was talking to somebody about this. Is the model used to be that you'd work, if you were lucky, and a lot of them are seeing this model proven incorrectly, mm-hmm. 40, 50, 60 years for a company, then you retire and enjoy life. And I think millennials are like, why can't I enjoy life while I'm living life? I don't want to wait till I'm 60 to, okay, now, let me start the clock on the enjoyment part. It's like, nah, I want to enjoy it now. And like, that is like a foreign concept. It really only like, I had my aha, my light bulb, or my click moment. Like, they really waited until retirement. And that's when you do the things you enjoy. And that's when you find your purpose and your value. And that's when you live life. And it's like, why can't I do that at 18?
Yeah. And you know what? The thing is that is really rocking the economy, because millennials are the largest generation since baby boomers. For baby boomers, they really built a lot of the large companies that you see now. Gerber came out when the baby boomers were just being born. And, you know, it's multi-million, billion-dollar company now, right? So a lot of the, you know, companies, retirement, like every large spike and all these companies that have been growing, they've been growing because they've been growing on the backs of baby boomers. Now, with millennials wanting to sort of do their own thing, and not necessarily follow that traditional path, you know, so now the retirement companies are like, okay, millennials are not saving. What's going on? Well, they're not saving for retirement because they want to spend the money now and enjoy life. And so it's having an impact on the economy and the way that businesses sort of structure their strategy, because it's so non-traditional.
Mm. Well, and I could see that, but I never, thank you for bringing that finance background in. I never looked at it that way, but I could definitely see how that math could be. I guess it's more linear versus that back end spike where I guess like the bell curve where you would, you know, build up, then withdraw. Whereas yep. ours is probably just more of a line because mm-hmm. we're just spending and withdrawing actively. So I also want to talk a little bit, and maybe it ties in this subject as well.
If you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free, 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 free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
The website, LaTeishaStyles.com, which of course folks will be in the show notes, but what do you see as the purpose, mission, values? I've had to make this really long / list because you call it all types of different things of your website. Like what motivated you to start the website?
Yeah. So my motivation is to help, my mission is to help 100 women entrepreneurs to earn their first dollar online and then take it to the point where they can work for themselves full time.
Like a true millennial.
Yeah. I'm really passionate about this because I graduated into the Great Recession and it took me 11 months to find a job. You know, I basically made the decision at that point. I said, I'm never going to allow any person, any economy, like no one is going to tell me whether or not I can make a dollar. I want to be in control of whether I make money and how much I make. And I'm determined to build something that, you know, can take me if I want to leave you know, my job and I want to, you know, have kids and stay home with my kids, I want to be able to still make money and do that. And I know there are a lot of women entrepreneurs that want to do that, even if they're still working, you know, full-time job. You know, when you're an entrepreneur, you're an entrepreneur, no matter, you know, if you're working full-time or not. It's just what you have inside of you. But I feel like, you know, we have the ability to do that and to create a sustainable income for ourselves. And that's what I want to do with, you know, all of the content that I provide, and all the education and the community that I build. I want to build it for young women entrepreneurs that want to create their own sustainable business.
Yes, that was very precise. Normally people, I'm like, so why'd you start the website? They're like, you're like, oh, I want to do 100 women and I want to help. But I was like, that was a great answer.
Well, it's, I was going to say real quick. So I was surprised that you said 100 and not a larger number. So why 100?
Well, I believe you first have to start with a number that is large enough to motivate you, but small enough to be realistic. Like, I don't want to say I want to help 10,000 women to leave their job when I've got to focus on helping 100 first. And then those 100 will tell 100. And then that's how I get to the next 100. So it's starting with 100 first.
I like that, because I've made the mistake, and I'm sure a lot of people, they make the mistake of setting these grandiose goals for themselves. And then when they don't hit that goal, it's like, crap, man, like, what did I do wrong? And in the process of doing that, they don't recognize that they got that first 100 because they were thinking about the first 1,000, you know? Yeah. So I think it's really important that people keep that in mind, that, you know, yes, you may ultimately want to help 1,000,000 people, but like, bruh, sis, like, let's just get this first 50.
Right.
And you also talk about, on the website, it's 32,000. I don't know if it was more or less in the long run that you got out of a consumer debt. What did the debt include? And do you have any thoughts, tips that you would share with folks for how you got out?
Yeah, so it was about $22,000 of credit card debt. And there was about $10,000 left on a car loan. And so that was what the debt was comprised of. 18 years old, first credit card, free t-shirt, you know, the typical story.
It's like a co-ed fraternity of people who've like gotten into debt. It's like, oh yeah, you got that t-shirt too?
Yep. And actually, I still have the first dress that I bought with the credit card. I did a video on you. What's that?
I'm just cracking up.
I'm just laughing.
Yeah, I did a video on YouTube talking about, you know, like that month that I had paid everything off. I did a video on YouTube and I brought the dress out and I like threw the dress behind me. I don't even know if it still fits, but I told myself I was going to hang on to that dress until I paid off the last dollar. And now I can get rid of the dress, symbolically speaking, but I think it might still fit. So I think I still have it.
See, that's crazy, because it's like I black out when I use my credit card. So people are like, well, how'd you get 9,000? I'm like, man, I went to sleep on Monday. I woke up on Tuesday. It was wild, man. It was wild. Yep. Like, I just think it's all of the unconscious spending, which now I unconsciously spend with my debit card, but at least it's tied to cash. But it's like, I'm all this free money, charge. And then like, it just shows up one day and I'm looking at the bill, like, you know, with the, I was trying to think of a meme, but it didn't come to me, so it didn't come fast enough. But I'm just like sitting, oh, like when LeBron was reading the score sheet, I'm like, what? This don't make no sense. Like, where did it all go wrong? Like, Rich knows I'm always like, fraud. You know, what's the fraud hotline number? And then I start looking at the person. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I wasn't that city. Oh, all right, that address. Yeah, okay, these are all me.
Yeah, it's crazy, because like, I'll go through and I'm still getting comments on that video. I'm tempted to turn the comments off sometimes, but because I'll have people that are like, you know, how did you get that much? And, you know, you're dumb, or, you know, you paid your bank that much, and just saying like really ugly things. But sounds I leave like those comments there because it's like, I want other people who are in the same place where I was. I want them to see that it doesn't matter what anybody else says. It's all about you paying off your own debt, and it's going to feel really good once you do it. And it's not going to matter what anybody else thinks of you. All that's going to matter is that now you don't have to worry about your credit cards that are haunting you when you go to bed at night.
Right, right. So in terms of steps that you, well, one, how long did it take you to get that debt out the paint? And then Two, what steps do you think you took that made the biggest difference in being able to chop away at that debt?
Yeah, the number one, I went to an all cash budget. So instead of, you know, using my credit card to supplement my budget, I basically stopped using credit. So not only did I have to pay the credit cards, but I also had to manage just with the cash that was coming in. And I used my debit card. Like I didn't just like take cash out of the ATM. But it was it wasn't a budget that was adding extra money from a credit card. So whereas before I was maybe spending, you know, $1.20 for every dollar I earned, now I only was able to spend about 75 cents because I had to, you know, take the other 25 cents and pay off the debt. So that's one of the key things that I did. The other thing, which was huge, was I stopped impulse spending. So whenever I used to go out, I would, you know, maybe go out to the store, you know, for a t-shirt, for example. And then while I was there, I would see some really cute jeans. And I'd say, oh man, I need to get those jeans, right? And then I would just use a credit card, swipe, done. Well, my new rule was if I went to the store for X, right? If I went to the store to go buy a book and I saw a journal, I didn't go to the store to buy the journal. So I had to write that on a list and I had to go back to go get it later. I wasn't allowed to buy it at that point. And what that did was it stopped me from impulse shopping, but it also helped me to evaluate why I was getting all those extra things. Like I was racking up my card because I just wanted those things. It wasn't actually a need. And then what I found was that later on, you know, after I wrote it down, I was like, well, I really don't need a journal. Actually, I have three or four notebooks here that I can use. Mm. So that was like a really, really huge shift for me. And then later, as I got much better with that, I allowed myself to purchase those things kind of like an impulse, but I had to use cash for it. So I couldn't even use like a credit card. Like I had to use my debit card for it. And then I was like, oh, that's not happening because I didn't want to pull money, you know, out of my checking account for it. So that was a really big shift that I did and a huge change. And so it wasn't only changing, you know, the ability to use credit, but it was changing my habits with credit. That's what allowed me to pay it off. It took me about 3 years. I created a 3-year debt-free budget and, cause I still wanted to save at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I still wanted to put money away into my, 401k because my company was matching, you know, 50 cents for every dollar I put in. So I wanted to take advantage of that. And so I didn't pay it off as quickly as possibly, you know, as I probably could have, but I still made it within 3 years, got it all done, was able to save. At that time, the stock market was doing really well. So it was a really good decision to do that. And also was able to save like an emergency fund and, you know, do some traveling. And I didn't want to make it restrictive where all I was doing was paying debt. I still wanted to give myself, you know, something to sort of reward myself for staying on that track.
Yeah. So it sounds like you had goals in mind. And so for some people they're like, I got debt. I'm going to suffer for the next year to pay it all off at once. Whereas you were like, you know what? I'm fine to not pay it off as fast because I still want to live my life and I still want to do these millennial things in the interim. The other thing I was thinking about Target when you were talking about impulse shopping. I was thinking about like how I walk in Target and I just start perspiring immediately because I'm like, oh, I'm here for a toothbrush, but I want to buy rice. And we have this running joke at home about how like I'll just buy something in the store just because I think that it's out at home, but we have a full thing there. And yep. For me, that thing is rice. Like, oh, I'm in Target. Like, oh, so toothpaste. Like, oh, some mouthwash. Like, oh, a random Captain America t-shirt. Oh, and some rice. Yep.
It's the bullseye. The bullseye pulls you right in.
That impulse thing can feel really challenging to people. So if somebody is like really struggling with that, like they actually start perspiring, what would you say is probably one step that they can take that might be an in-between between what you did and what they can do to start really getting that under control?
Make a list, you know, make a list of what you're going to the store for. And if you have to make a list, go to Target, then come home and then go to the grocery store and then come home and then go to the mall. You can do that. But as long as you have a list for each place, and if you get there and you think you need something and you're not quite sure, if it's not on the list, just go back for it. You know, be okay with making a mistake and not being a perfect person, and be okay with just going back to the store. Your money will thank you for it.
Indeed, indeed. And so you've talked about investing, and it sounds like something that you were also doing while you were in school. And we've gotten a lot of questions about investing. Don't worry, we're not going to put you on the hot seat for a bunch of listener questions. But we've got a lot of folks who are now starting to get interested in that field, which is, of course, great to see. So I guess if you could just kind of take us through when you started, what the challenges were for you to get started, and then any kind of like quick tips you might have for people who are thinking about investing, even if it's like just go talk to somebody, go talk to, I don't know, a real estate person or whatever it is.
Yeah, I started investing at the age of 18, and this is what I would recommend you not do. So I would turn the TV on to CNBC in the morning, Squawk Box, and whatever stock they were talking about that day, I would buy it. Because I said, well, if they're talking about right. It's funny now, right? I was like, if they're talking about it on CNBC, it must be a good stock. And then I realized that wasn't, you know, quite an investing strategy. So once I went back to school for finance, I started to learn about, you know, how to actually value companies and whether you're looking for a stock that's a growth stock versus, you know, what I call dinosaur stocks, you know, those stocks that are really just like income stocks. I started to learn more about that. I joined the Student Managed Investment Fund at my college, and then I really learned how to research stocks and invest. And then I started finding more about the foreign exchange market. I had so much fun learning foreign exchange, and I learned, you know, entire strategy with that. So if someone wants to start investing and you're really serious about it, I would say find at least one other person that wants to invest as well. You know, kind of get pull together like a group of people, because what helped me the most was that Student Managed Investment Fund, where we were all talking about the companies, and then we had some required reading. One of the books was by Benjamin Graham, The Intelligent Investor. It's really, really thick, and it's going to take a while to get through. But if you can get through it, and you want to actually research stocks so that you can invest for the long term, that's the best book I can recommend for you. If you just want to trade and sort of, you know, play around and you play with some money, I would recommend that you open a demo account, or, you know, a paper trading account, and then, you know, just start buying stuff, buy, sell, you know, figure out, you know, just exactly how to do it without your own money, without your own cash on the line. And then what'll happen is you'll start meeting more people who are actually doing what you want to do. And then you can get connected with someone who maybe knows what they're doing. You can maybe hire a mentor, you know, you can kind of go and do that. As a college student, you know, you really have the ability to, you've got the time to do it. If you're older, then maybe you do want to just go sit down with, you know, representative of, you know, some investing firm or something like that.
Got it. So the name of that book again, I know you said Ben Graham, and then I trailed off in my writing.
It's The Intelligent Investor.
Okay, cool. The Intelligent Investor. So the other thing I wanted to ask, now that we're on this topic, so there's these investing apps out there, the Acorns, the other one, I think, you know, there's one out there, Goldbean. And there are a few others that do similar things in terms of automating investing using basically cents from your bank account. So how do you feel about some of these apps that are out here as a starting point for people that are interested in investing?
Some of the apps where, you know, you're taking a couple of cents and investing that here and there, the fees are so much higher than if you took larger chunks to invest with. If you do want to start investing and you want to sort of avoid a lot of the fees, there's a company called Loyal 3 where you can invest and there's no trading fees at all. but you just can't specify a time to buy and you can't specify, you know, like stop loss or anything advanced like that. But they help you invest with companies that you already know and love. So it's popular companies where you'll know the names already. You know, some of these smaller apps or the apps where they're, you know, you're sort of taking your change and investing in, I think doing that is better to, you know, just put that in a savings account if you're going to just take change here and there. And then once you have a larger amount, go and, you know, go and invest that. But, you know, if you really want to get started, it's the education that gets you there first. I will say Scottrade, they have a really good investor education center and they'll take you through. I mean, they basically want to educate their investors because they don't offer any, you know, handholding with their investing. And so they've got an entire investor education center. They hold seminars, live seminars inside of the local branches. Mm-hmm. I know this because I used to work there as an intern.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I would definitely recommend, you know, checking out Scottrade or checking out Loyal 3. And another broker that I really like is Motif Investing, because even if you don't know anything, you can start looking at how other investors invest. They'll actually allow you to peek into another investor's portfolio, and then you can just copy their portfolio and, you know, and start investing that way.
That sounds pretty dope. I'm going to have to look into a few of these here links and Google searchables. So appreciate the recommendations there. Cause, you know, with the apps, you know, I have Acorn on my phone and I look at it and I know that it's not going to be like this major growth where suddenly, you know, 10 cents is going to turn into 10,000. Like I'm not expecting that to happen, but. You know, I look and I'm kind of like, you know, this is this. I'm like, this kind of just feels like something I could do with like a digit, not in terms of investing, but putting that money aside. Like, I don't feel like I'm getting, you know, that much gain from it. So it's interesting to actually hear you tell people to look into alternatives or to actually pull some money first and then do something more substantial, of course, with the proper guidance versus kind of getting your feet wet with these apps that automate. And you know, as I'm talking through this, I realize with the app, you know, I'm signed up. I picked a risk level, but you don't really learn kind of the fundamentals of investing. You kind of just set it and forget it, which kind of takes away from the whole point of being able to learn to do it on your own.
Exactly. And if you, and for the set it and forget it, I promise, if you just look at the way the fees are, every time you're investing, how much it's costing you, and then, you know, average it out, like let's say if it were a larger amount, you'll realize that, you know, percentage wise, it's probably more expensive than just, you know, taking $10. You can take $10 and invest in a stock that you, for a company that you probably log onto their website if multiple times a day, you can put $10 in that stock with no fees.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to reevaluate some things here.
So talking about the entrepreneurs as well, a little bit of a subject change, unless it's related. But do you have any, I guess, major key, you know, shout out to DJ Khaled, steps that you have for entrepreneurs as they either prepare or begin to transition out of the 9 to 5?
Yeah, if you're an entrepreneur and you know, you're in your 9 to 5 and you know that you're not made for that cubicle life, like me, I knew I wasn't made for that. The first thing that you should do is start thinking about what are your personal skills and talents. What are the skills and talents that you've either learned while you're, you know, at that job you know you're at, or what skills and talents have you been using outside of that job? There's so many skills that you have that you don't even realize that somebody else would be willing to pay you for, and that you might actually enjoy doing, you know, either on the side or eventually doing full time. My issue is that I didn't think I had a specific skill with the exception of, you know, being able to blog and write. It wasn't until I took the Gallup Strength Finders test.
Yep, I heard of it.
And you never heard of it?
No, I was saying I have heard of it. I haven't taken it. I've heard it on a bunch of podcasts, Strength Finders, but I just haven't done it myself.
Oh man, you've got it. You have to take it. I'm going to say right now, before the end of the day, please go take it.
Yo, you were like giving me this record long to-do list from an episode. I think I'm sitting here. Yo, I don't normally take this many notes. There's probably one other episode where I've done that. And I'm like, all right, number 7. So I appreciate it, though. It's super helpful. And I hope others go out and do the same.
Yeah, this the Gallup Strength Finders, it's not free. I think it's cheap, though. I think it's $15 or $20. And, you answer a series of questions and it'll tell you what your top strengths are. So for someone like me who, I'm sort of good at, a lot of things. I'm like jack of all trades, I thought I was master of none until I took the Strength Finders test. And then it told me that strategy was my top strength. And that's when it clicked with me. I was like, oh, wow, that's the reason why I can do all these little things. But it doesn't seem like there's one specific skill that I have. It's because I'm really good at strategy. And so that's when I started offering to entrepreneurs, hey, let me help you with your strategy. And I can see beyond what they can see and I can pull everything together. Sort of like in a career, I probably would have been good at, project management. Because I can figure out like, what are all the little pieces that have to happen before we can get to this place? And then, who do we need to bring in and sort of all those things. So that's when I started offering that skill to entrepreneurs. And then specifically helping with like digital marketing, which I've been doing in the past as well. But it wasn't until I took that test that I realized, okay, that's your skill. That's why it seems like, you're floundering right now is because you didn't realize you're actually really good with strategy. And that's where you need to focus your time and efforts.
Are you familiar with like 16 personalities, which it's basically like the Myers-Briggs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you taken that one? The Myers-Briggs?
I have. I took the short version, but yeah.
So from taking each of them, I guess, what would you say the differences are, if anything comes to mind? Cause it sounds like the Strength Finder, of course, addresses strengths, but some of these other tests also address kind of your strengths and your weaknesses. So I guess kind of what did you find to be the differences since they kind of cover similar things in a way?
Yeah, I think the main difference for me was the Myers-Briggs tells you who you are, whereas the StrengthsFinders shows you what you could become if you only focused on your strengths. And, so with the Myers-Briggs, I know I'm an introvert. I know that, I am, intuitive. I know that, like those things that they told me, I was like, okay, this is great. This is why, I've excelled in these places and why I've had such a hard time here. So I know that, but with the StrengthsFinders test and, they both have their places, but with the StrengthsFinders, it really showed me like, if you just focus on these, this is what you could become if you, assume the throne and take on your strengths. And it was just really powerful for me.
Love that.
So we usually, I say wrap up in a hot seat. I'm not really sure. I probably need to come up with a jazzy metaphor for this. Can't believe you just said jazzy. Please edit that out, Rich.
Nope. It stays. Gavel hits the table.
I'm really upset that was the word that came to my mind. Like I'm really glad.
I like jazzy. Like Jazzy Jeff.
I just don't like that it came so quickly. Like it flew out naturally. Like I just use that in my everyday. I'm going through some things. It's Sunday, so we'll be all right. So what is the one, which is key, best piece of, in this case, probably personal finance or entrepreneurial advice that you've either received or shared? Like your aha moment, you're like, oh man, that was a game changer. Yeah, I woke up the next day, I took over the game. I put the industry on its ear. Like what would you share with the people?
Yeah, I'll try to, this is a story, so I'll try to make it really quick.
Cool.
I was working at a call center. I was selling credit cards over the phone and I was actually really good at, at getting a yes. And I had one person that I got on the phone with and he was giving me a hard time. And I said, why don't you want to switch to this credit card? Because it's going to be so much better. There'll be no annual fee. And he said, well, I use a business credit card and I just write off the expense on my taxes. And I had no idea what that meant. So I was like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. It'd be better if you just don't get this, if you don't have a fee every year. And so he said, well, you're probably not understanding how a business owner looks at expenses versus an individual. He said, read this book. I want you to write it down. Go read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And so I was like writing it down. I was maybe 19, 20 years old. He said, go read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and then you'll understand it. After I read that book, it totally changed the way that I viewed you know, my career, that I viewed school, changed the way that I viewed my money. And I realized at that point, I needed to get ahead of my money. I always felt behind. And once I read that book, I was like, I've got to get ahead so I can start investing so that I don't have to join the rat race, essentially.
Huh. You know, well, you know, I was going to say real quick, one, I'm surprised. Like, I'm like, wait, so the person who normally hangs up, like, took a minute to, like, school you?
It was very surprising. He was really nice. He had the time. He was an entrepreneur.
Like, oh, human communication. Let me go ahead and interact. What I was going to say, in some weird Inception meta type of world where we're all operating on the same but different timelines, it would be irony, because we've had a number of people in the sales, including present company, that sold credit cards. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, that was just such a big thing at the time, telemarketing in general. Before the whole MCI yep. collapse, which was actually very big in Austin. But I say all that because it would be weird if we sold ourselves one of these credit cards. Like, if your conversation was with somebody else that we had on the show, they're like, yeah, this one girl called me up, man. I couldn't tell her no. And I told her to reach. I told her to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I went ahead and bought a credit card from her. $25,000 in debt later.
I know, right? It was all existing customers, and I was helping them transfer their balance from one with a percentage to a card with no APR. So I was doing good.
Yeah, that actually seems to be, I guess, a model that doesn't exist anymore, because I did credit cards. I lasted 1 week. It was the worst week experience of my life, but I was chasing one of my good get-rich-quick schemes.
Yeah.
And, like, they don't do that anymore. Like, they'll mail you credit card transfers, but I can't remember the last time someone called me to either sell me a credit card or to have me transfer.
Bruh.
I feel like that model's gone.
Yeah, no one really has a home phone anymore anyway.
That's a good point.
I was doing it, I was calling people. They were like, don't call me. It's Saturday morning. And
I'm not on the list. I'm not supposed to be on the list.
Oh, man. Memories.
So, where can the people find you?
So I'm most active on Facebook. So if you just go to Facebook at Letitia TV, you'll be able to find me there, chat with me. I have a lot of followers and fans on that page that just, you know, leave comments, and I'm always in the comments and chatting with people. That's where I'm most active. Other than that, I do have a freebie. If you go to letitiastyles.com/gift, and I'll send you a free video training on, if you'd like to become an entrepreneur, I'll send you a free video training that will help you on your journey.
Nice. How people love free gifts, swag, anything. So you have just won some fans. I know it.
And that, I just want to say that is item number 8 on my list. Item number 8 from this episode. So
we got to give you 2 more then. So you have around 10.
Oh gosh, what have I done to myself? I'm sure I can go to your website and be like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's boom. There it is. There it is. Just from the amount of insight that you dropped on this episode. So Letitia, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's been an awesome time. You dropped a lot of knowledge for the people. Yeah, it's been really great having you on.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
Cool. So we want to thank everyone else for listening to this episode, of course. If you have topics you'd like to hear us cover or thoughts on an episode, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. And also, don't forget to check out our Patreon page if you have not checked it out already. We're trying to raise money so that we can do some more insightful and useful things for the show, webinars that we're not creating, guides we're not creating. And there are some other bigger dreams that we have for the podcast that we could use your help in getting there. To check that out, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/patron or patron for the drinkers out there.
And don't forget to join our email list where we share top articles we read throughout the week. Apparently, Rich's top 10 list he'll have for us, work and money tips and more. And you can sign up by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email.
There it is. So again, thanks to everyone for listening. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.